on your birthday.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals the hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening and happy Shabbat. I am here with Kirk. I am calling in via a cell phone this evening. It's my first attempt at doing so. My hope is over the next week to acquire a cellular-based Wi-Fi telephone that I can go back to wearing the headset. Our good friend Jerry McLaughlin has arranged for us to be able to do a simulcast and even to record shows on a syndicated network. In addition to Blog Talk Radio, so that we can reach more people, and we'll need to make certain that we have decent audio quality to accomplish that. And I really prefer to be able to use a headset, so I'm going to look into cellular headsets and a headphone, and let's hope that all works out. But let me know tonight how this is working. Those of you who have been following along know that I did not know where I was going to be last Friday or this Friday. And that last Friday, I was scheduled to depart to go to Abaco. And that at the time, we were looking down the sites of a Cat 5 hurricane. What transpired is interesting, and frankly, I'm not making any claim here. I'm just going to tell you what occurred and make no claim whatsoever, other than I think it would be inappropriate to not at least share what occurred. Dorian was the name of the hurricane. It's still a hurricane. It's up now in Virginia, just off the coast. It was the second strongest hurricane in recorded history, Atlantic hurricane in recorded history. I'm not certain if there's been a stronger hurricane in the Pacific, but the second strongest in history. It had sustained winds over 190 miles an hour with wind gusts over 220 miles an hour. The storm surge that pushed over Abaco and Grand Bahama was upwards of 15 feet, and on top of that, they had seas of 20 to 25 feet. The highest place on Abaco is only about 40 feet high. Most of Abaco and Grand Bahama is within 20 feet of sea level. So every part of both islands was flooded. And while the winds were devastating and blew off the roofs of most homes, probably 90% of homes had severe structural damage and lost walls or roofs due to the winds. The storm surge and subsequent waves on low-lying islands devastated everything. There were maybe 1 in 20 homes, those built of concrete and of masonry block with cement roofs, that appear to withstand the bulk of the storm. But those homes are now being occupied by, in some cases, scores of families. And those homes, in addition to being occupied by scores of families, are will be looted and torn apart by people who are desperate. And so if you owned a place there, even if it survived the storm, you will never be able to visit it again. I was scheduled, for those who don't know, I think most do know, I own a boat. Its name is Kara, based upon my favorite Hebrew verb. I'm dating a woman named Leah, who is the first wife of Jacob. I have a dog named Asher, which is the word that brought all of this into fruition. Without the word Asher, we would not be here this evening. And many of you know that I was able to negotiate a deal with Yahweh. It's one that I didn't talk about until we had known each other, and I'd been doing this for, well, I've been doing it now for 18 years, Kirk. And I think the first time that I spoke about the deal I made with Yahweh when he asked me to expose and condemn Islam was about 6 or 7 years ago. So by that time, you know, we had gone through 15 books together and probably 20,000 broadcasts, and certainly 15,000 broadcasts. And at that point, you know, it was just time to translate the 91st Psalm and probably time to talk about what happened. And for those who have been listening over all of this period, you'll know that for no reason other than I don't think anybody else was willing to do the job. Yeah, I asked me to do something that I said no to, which was to expose and condemn Islam. And he said, even did with Moshe, and I'm not in his league, obviously, not even one billionth, but his manner is the same. It doesn't matter if you're Dode or Moshe or Yashaya or you know, some insignificant twig like me. It's all about free will. God does not want, and it's about free will, and it's about engaging together. God does not want to do anything alone. He can do everything. He doesn't want to. It's not his style. It's not his nature. Even if he has to work through the dumbest, most flawed implement in the world, he'd prefer to do that than he would to work alone. But Kirk, as you know, even amongst dirty, dented, damaged goods, there's no one willing to expose and condemn Islam, at least the way that he wanted it done. And I wasn't among them, but I said, all right, you know, I understand it's not the greatest gig in the world. What would you want? And we talked about it. And one of the things I asked for is that he would protect my home. Protect my loved ones, protect my home. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I didn't even ask for me. I didn't think that was appropriate. You know, if we're doing something that God wants done, I guess that kind of went with the territory. So, but it wasn't fair for my family and therefore my home to be subject to what, you know, Muslims were going to do if I were to expose them to Islam. I'm the only person I think that's ever done what I've done in my own name who has received thousands of death threats, who has never hired a bodyguard, never gone into hiding, never ducked. God did exactly what he said he was going to do, protect my home. So what does that bring us to the events of last week? The Cat 5 hurricane, had it even been a Cat 3, and it was headed just north of Fort Lauderdale. My boat is in Fort Lauderdale. Had it hit the way that it, where it was
for
every tract coming ashore. Had that occurred, I would have lost the boat, my home, which is my home now because I'm no longer leasing a home here in Fort Lauderdale. I'm living on the boat. The boat, there was been no way whatsoever to save the boat. It would have been lost. And if you look at what happened in the Bahamas and Abaco, you know what I mean. There isn't a single boat that survived. Not one. There isn't a single marina that survived. It's nothing. It's total devastation. Yes, there's only 30 known fatalities, but there are thousands upon thousands of people unaccounted for that were literally swept into the sea and swept away. And that would have been the fate of my home, this boat that I have been rehabbing and working on for the past year. And so as the hurricane intensified, and now it was a 4, predicted to be a 5, and headed right to where I was, I recall saying, you know, why am I fretting over this? I ought not be, you know, I should take the proper precautions, but I ought not be fretting over this. I devoted the last 18 years of my life to doing what Yahweh had done, and he promised he was going to protect my home. So I said, hey, I guess I don't need to remind you, but, well, we have a deal. It wasn't 15 minutes. Might have not even been 10 minutes. Could have been 5 minutes. After we had that little conversation, and I think, you know, I don't talk to Yah a lot. Our relationship works best if I listen. And so my translations are listening to him. My contemplation of those translations when I write the commentary and I share the insight are all listening to him. And, you know, my conversation with him is mostly, wow, God, that's amazing. I really love that. It's just so spectacular. It's just me responding to how sensational, magnificent his nature and testimony and insights and brilliance, personality, character are. Occasionally I'll chat, but I always figured that he knows what I need and what I may want before I open my mouth, and the answer is almost always found in listening. But this time I did. I said, God, you know, we have a deal. Well, I think it was about 5 minutes later. I was using the Weather Underground as my. They have 4 really spectacular tools that show all 20 models for hurricanes, and then one that just shows the top 6, and then one that depicts the storm as it is, showing all of its winds, all of its rain, all of its intensity, and along with its past and future track. And so after 4 or 5 days of seeing this storm just barreling right to us, like it was shot out of a cannon. It was projected to turn directly north. I mean, it wasn't. Let's call it 15 minutes after my conversation, and the next update, it followed exactly the same path, and then 50 miles offshore. It's like, okay, I can't go that way anymore. Fort Lauderdale, I'm sorry, but we're not coming to you anymore. It's going directly north. And it stayed offshore all the way. In fact, it's still offshore right now at Virginia. And so I'm not going to make any claim that was an answer to a promise. But I'm certainly not going to deny it. And I was originally kind of uncomfortable even sharing this, but Kirk, we began our conversation before the show began with you saying you and Terry had talked about it and knew this was going to happen as you watched the track of the storm come right directly for us. And you said, Terry said, don't worry about it. I was not going to let that happen. And the reason I wasn't going to share anything is because that storm may have killed 5,000 people in the Bahamas.
Yes.
But understand that the path of the storm was going directly over Abaco and directly over Grand Bahama. It didn't change its course there. Its course changed after Freeport, which is the second largest city in the Bahamas. It was there that rather than going due west, which is what the track of the storm had been for the previous 10 days, it was after it did what it did in Grand Bahama that it just turned and went directly north over the sea. And from the turn, it hasn't harmed anyone. It's just like, nope. Not going to do this. And it was almost like, can you make this storm move in such a way that after it does whatever it was going to do, it not only keeps it from hitting us, but doesn't harm anyone else? And that's what happened. Now, there are two other hurricanes out there in the Atlantic. There's one that looks particularly menacing. That now has a 60% chance of turning into a named storm that's off the coast of Africa. And so I have moved the boat. I'm now in they kicked me out of the house that I had been leasing. I stayed there another 4 or 5 days because technically they can't force you off a dock with an approaching storm. And so I was able to stay there through the storm. But once the winds cleared, which was Wednesday of this week, when the storm finally cleared here, the winds and the surge from it, I was able to move the boat. I'm still in Fort Lauderdale. I'm in a much safer place. The home I'm now in front of is owned by a wonderful Jewish couple. We've had long conversations. Esther is in love with her dog. So everybody is happy. And so I'm with a secular Jewish couple. He's a cardiologist. And I couldn't be in a better or happier spot. So that's kind of my world at the moment. I don't know how long we're going to be here. But it's good. And there is the possibility that very soon we could be doing a simulcast on a syndicated show without commercials. And for Jerry McLaughlin, our covenant brother and good friend to have arranged that is pretty miraculous. So I'm
pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, Kirk, what I'd like to do is just reprise the last statement that we considered during our show last week, and then move on to new material. We're in the midst of Mizmor, Lyrics to Be Sung, Psalm 103. We were just approaching 19, but I want to read the 18th statement once again because it's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
With the steadfast and enduring love, the unfailing generosity and mercy, chesed. Chesed is the concept that the Christian Babel corrupted into grace, and naming it after the gratia, the Roman charities. The Greek charities were renamed the gratia by Rome. And so they have this concept of grace named after the Roman goddesses. Yahweh has a thing called mercy. It's interesting. I got to hear mercy's voice for the first time today. Jerry McLaughlin has a lovely, beautiful daughter. And as he was talking to us before the show tonight, his daughter kept on saying, "Come on, Daddy, stop talking to him." And she wanted to play. And it was just, it was so charming to hear her voice. But that's Yahweh's idea of mercy. It's magnanimous. It's unmitigated affection, overwhelming desire to favor, wanting to lavish someone with benefits. If I were to define mercy, I would say that if you were the perfect mother or father,
mm-hmm.
and you were in a perfect relationship with your son and or daughters, and you were in a position to give them everything that has merit in this world, everything that you could possibly do for them, then you would chesed. You would supply chesed. They would be the beneficiaries of chesed. That is chesed. It's unfailing generosity, steadfast and enduring love, something of is wholly magnanimous. It's one of those things that you do not expecting anything in return, and yet if it's done well and it's done with the right person, you often get back even more than you give.
Mm-hmm.
In the enrichment of that individual and their relationship with you. So this idea that, you know, Yahweh is this mean taskmaster, this Pauline rubbish, that the God of the Torah is wrathful and hateful, well, that is partially true. He hates the likes of Paul and religion. But with his children, he is extraordinarily chesed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the chesed of Yahweh. Kirk,
yes.
One of the things that we have constantly been confronted with, as we first encountered the choter, this insignificant twig off the branch that is dove of the Tree of Lives,
mm-hmm.
and then came across the neck, which is the sign that Yahweh was lifting up that the choter helps compile using Torah and Mizmor.
Right.
And then ultimately, here recently, we took a departure into Dabatim 29 here with our last program, as well as in Solomon's speech at the dedication of Yahweh's temple, the first sermon on the Mount, is that the Nakam is an informed and observant foreigner who
yes.
comes at a different time speaking a different language. Who Yada, Yahweh, that the first thing that God always says about this individual and their contribution is their dedication to exposing and explaining Yahweh's name.
Correct.
And it is still the thing that is probably the most unique about everything that we do. Is that we not only say that Yahweh's name is Yahweh, we explain how we got to Yahweh and what Yahweh means and what the characters that underlie his name mean.
Right.
You know, a hand reaching down and out to us, an open hand.
Open hand.
That
open.
Reaches. Right. It's not only a welcome, but it's a hand that it is like a father's hand lifting a child up.
Yes.
To grasp them by the hand. So it's Yahweh reaching down and out to us and wanting to grasp hold of our hands to lift us up. And then there are two hays. Of course, the second hay makes his name feminine, or at least represents Sarah as the mother of the covenant. And the first would represent Abraham, because there's nothing more important to Yahweh than the covenant that was formed between he and Abraham and his wife Sarah. Those two characters, the Hayes, are two observant individuals, two people standing up, engaged, walking with Yahweh, going places with Yahweh. They are two people that are looking up and reaching up to him. As a matter of fact, you can look at the two hands on each of the two Hayes and the hand in Yahweh's name. We have five hands in Yahweh's name.
Five hands.
Yeah, because we have five conditions of the covenant and five commandments of the covenant.
Yep.
And in between those two people, we have a wall, which is the tent peg, which speaks of increasing,
of
connection, of securing, enlarging. All the concepts that Yahweh wants to do for us when he provides the benefits to the covenant makes us better, enriches us, empowers us. That's how Yahweh writes his name. It's what his name means. It's based up on the verb Haya. Haya means I was, I am, and I will be. It defines existence. Haya explains the nature of light. It explains the nature of the Hebrew language, where verbs are not stuck in time, but liberated in all time.
Mm-hmm.
It answers the single most important question a human being can ask. Does God exist?
Yeah.
His name is based on the verb, I exist. And we recognize that each of the letters in Yahweh's name, there's three, one's repeated, they're all vowels.
Right.
And we looked at the thousands of Hebrew words that contain those letters, and we're very readily could ascertain how they're pronounced. Well, Haya does a lot for us because it's obviously got the Yod, the Y, and the Hey, the H.
Mm-hmm.
So, Haya. So, there's the first syllable, Ya, right?
Yes.
Ya. And the Y was so easy for us because, well, what's the word that Yahweh uses to describe his source of teaching and instruction and guidance?
Yahweh, from Torah. The verb for Torah and the Yahweh.
What letters did it come from?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's from the
law?
Yes. From
the
Yahweh.
It comes from the law. What is
the law? Well, the Yahweh. Yahweh.
Yeah.
Correct.
Second to Torah, what is this, the most commonly spoken word by Hebrews and has been spoken by Jews for as long as they have existed? What is the single most commonly spoken word?
Shalom.
Shalom. Where does the O sound come from in Shalom?
From the Wag, yeah. O-W.
Right. Elohim is a variation of Eloah.
Eloah.
And Eloah is from a Wa.
Yes.
Yeah, it was straightforward. So it was easy, not difficult, to know how to pronounce Yahweh's name.
You have to not be observant to do it, to miss it.
Right. So it's one of the things that we very quickly realize that if we are observant and we're willing to listen to what Yahweh says, how do you listen to what Yahweh says? You recite his words. I'm there to tell you that I have never done a translation that I didn't read the translation, recite it audibly after having written it. Now, people would think I'm crazy. I'm just talking to myself. I'm not. Well, I am, but I'm not. I like to hear what the words sound like. And I find, Kirk, I don't know if you do this or not, but I find that if I pronounce the words and hear them, that I'm able to process them and understand them and incorporate them into my life and remember them so much more clearly than if I didn't do those things.
Oh, I think it's extremely helpful, yeah, to do that, yes.
So, yeah, how many times have we said Yahweh's name? And I don't know if Yahweh's name has been said anywhere else, at least with the same devotion to evidence and reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could also say about Yahweh's name how humble he is, because the only one out of the four letters, 25% of his name is dedicated to him, and 75% of his name is dedicated to his family.
Yeah, and the only part that's dedicated to him is the part
right
that's helping us.
Yeah.
It's the part that is helping us.
Yes.
No, you know, that's the thing. Interview the captain today, and I said, no, you need to understand. And we talked to everybody that we're going to work with. And I said, listen, you need to know that we are very controversial. And that's because we're openly hostile to religion and politics. Now, that does not mean that we don't know or like God. We happen to know him very well and have a great relationship, but we hate religion.
That's what he likes.
Yeah, and what we'll always say is that, and we said it today, But the God who revealed himself through these words, he's likable, he's friendly, he's approachable, he's humble, he's funny, he's brilliant. He's just fun to spend time with. And we see that over and over again, and it is absolutely true. And so, Yah was cool. I mean, most of my conversations, I call him Yah. He's fun, brilliant, entertaining. So, but the steadfast and enduring love, the unfailing generosity and mercy, the magnanimous nature, unmitigated affection, and overwhelming desire to favor, lavishing with benefits of Yahweh, is forever and ever, enduring eternally and without end. And by the way, men olam ad olam doesn't translate smoothly into English. But men means from.
Mm-hmm.
Olam would mean everlasting. So this is from a period that is eternally ancient into antiquity in time. So you would say, and since olam is forever,
mm-hmm.
you would be, min olam would be from forever and back in time. And then ad is and ed are the same word in Hebrew. It just vocalized one way or another. And it actually means witness, testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So Yahweh is saying that not only is he and his mercy from forever, but his testimony has consistently been merciful. And that ad olam means my testimony is eternally merciful without end going forward. So min olam ad olam would be from time immemorial to an eternity, perpetual period, everlasting in time. And it's all around the concept of testimony and witness because Yah's word and Yah are indistinguishable. So what this does is, you know, it wasn't a period where God had a Torah, a law, and was restrictive, and then all of a sudden he decided that he was going to be merciful when Yosha came along because the old way didn't work, as the Pauline concept. No. He is what he has always been, a loving father. That's just who he is. That's his nature. It's central to who he is. He has not changed. He is who he is. He will be as he is. Men, olam ad olam. For those, now, this is key, and we talked about this last week. You know, I thought we were just going to jump over this quickly and go to the next verse, but this is good stuff.
Yeah, it is.
He is not saying that his mercy is for everyone. God's not interested in saving everyone. God does not love everyone.
No, most people don't love him.
That's correct. And it would be unloving to his children who have engaged in the covenant to have them have to spend an eternity with all of the religious and political idiots out there.
Absolutely.
His mercy is to those who respect and revere him. Al Yare. For those who appreciate how awesome he is and wish to draw near to him. And those who don't just respect and revere him, but respect and revere his means to vindication and righteousness, his sense of his commitment to being right, to being correct. Tzedakah. His this means to correctly and appropriately acquit, to be honest, to be fair, to be beneficial, to be just, on behalf of his children's children. La ben ben. Not just to, okay, so Adam was a one at will, was his first child.
Mm-hmm.
Chawa. and Noah and his family. Enoch was one of those who was early on. And, of course, Abraham and Yishak, laughter and play, and Jacob. You just got to love some of the things that God chose. You look at Jacob. And Jacob was a mess. Jacob was the antithesis of what the Christian would think is the person God's going to choose to work with. And Jacob worked as an indentured servant for 7 years to marry Rachel, and ends up getting Leah, and then says, okay, what the heck, God, it's not what I wanted, but I'll work another 7 years for you to get to marry the one I really wanted. We wouldn't think that, or that he ends up with the eldest sister and hates her. And yet, yeah. Leah, the eldest of the two sisters, well, she's the mother of Yehuda. I think she bore four sons that became not only part of Yisrael, but the most important part of Yisrael, Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
And he never appreciated her. Yeah, never appreciated her. And he fell in love with Rachel, and yet Rachel is the one that absconded with Daddy's idol.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. So, no matter what you're doing here, it's just there's so much of it that just, ooh, my goodness. And then when Rachel dies, giving birth to Benjamin, who she called Benoni, son of my affliction, he, rather than embracing Leah and saying, oh, you know, I really should have loved you all along, he
runs out with somebody else.
Concubines into his family. He had, you know, several children through the concubines. I mean, this is not exactly the poster child for at least the Christian view of morality, or the people to say, you know, well, one monogamous marriage. I'm sorry, it's God's not a cosmic killjoy when it comes to sexuality. And Noah dote the man that he loved the most, and seven wives and 10 concubines. Now, I'm going to tell you, that doesn't appeal to me. What Jacob had doesn't appeal to me, and what Dode had does not appeal to me. I like women. I mean, I enjoyed dating when I had the opportunity. But one really smart, affectionate, loving, caring woman with a great attitude and great mind is perfect.
Yeah.
Two is a whole lot less than perfect. You know, this is not the second one is by subtraction, not by addition. And the idea of having three would be horrifying, and seven, oh my God. And then you add that 10 times, not a chance in the world. Well, Leah's children were, she had, Aloe, and Reuben,
mm-hmm.
and Shimon, and Yehuda, and Issachar, and Zebulun. I mean, can you imagine that you marry a woman that not only gave you Yehuda and the Aloe, but six sons that became, you know, half of Yisrael.
Yeah.
They didn't appreciate it. Yahweh's, it's on behalf of his children's children. So it's, we're all, I mean, look at Dode. Dode was his son. I think, to a large degree, I'm a child of Dode. I think we all are. I don't think we'd be in this position if it wasn't for what Dode wrote.
No, not at all.
He's the father of many of us in the covenant because of his word.
I understand.
So it's,
yeah.
But the steadfast and enduring love of Yahweh is forever and ever, enduring eternally without end. From the beginning of time, his witness is the same, and it is everlasting for those who respect and revere him. with his vindication and righteousness, with his being correct, fair and honest, beneficial and prosperous on behalf of his children's children. For those who observe Lashemar his covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, that's my next name, my tender. The boat that we use to go off and explore and whether it be fish or dive or just go to beautiful beaches and when we're out.
That's your observing boat.
Its name is Shamar.
Shamar, good choice.
You can see I have a fairly narrow source of inspiration here. fairly focused. For those who observe his covenant, for those who closely examine and carefully consider, focus upon and thinking about his covenant. Now, what's interesting about Yahweh is that while he wants us to act and engage upon the terms and conditions of covenant, and he will say that many, many times, the very act of being observant regarding something like his Torah or his covenant or his Moed Mikre, if you're going to closely examine and carefully consider, if you have an open mind and you devote the time, what God says is going to resonate.
Yes.
What he says...
Can't help it.
This is the sniff test, as they say. It's logical. It's appealing. It's credible. It's reassuring. It's uplifting. It's enriching. I don't think you really have to do anything more than be observant with an open mind. And what you find, what you discover, what you learn, what you come to know, what you come to understand, is going to encourage you to respond. Now, God's going to have the next word, asha, act and engage, here in a moment. But you can't act and engage until you first shamar. And shamar gets you, 95% of the way. Don't you think?
Yeah, and how do you mistranslate shamar when it starts off with the word for hearing, and then you add a rosh at the end, which is a symbol of someone observing? I mean, you can't miss this stuff if you study just a little bit. I mean, I'm dumbfounded all the time with how they turn this around to obey, and I mean, where do you get that? I mean, you've got to twist his word terribly to do that.
Three letters. The S-H is nourishing words.
Yeah.
The Mem is the life-giving and cleansing nature of water. It's a symbol of the set-apart spirit. And Rosh is an observant individual who's using their eyes and their ears and their brain to listen, to look, and to contemplate.
And facing along the proper path.
Correct. Shamar.
You just can't miss that.
God's magnanimous nature, the magnanimous nature of Yahweh, is forever. And his witness enduring eternally in time for those who respect and revere him with his vindication and righteousness on behalf of his children's children, for those who observe his covenant. Covenant is another very straightforward, easy to understand term. The thing that has troubled me more probably than anything is those who call themselves covenant and yet still cling to politics or religion or conspiracy. Who will use the terms that and insights that have been brought forth by these translations and these books and these shows, and yet will besmirch everyone and everything associated with them. Covenant is a family.
Yes.
It's not a vindictive family. It is an observant family. It is a family that is correct in their understanding, that is tzedakah. It is a family that respects and reveres Yahweh. And covenant is based on
Bayet.
Bayet. Yeah. Bayet was Jewish. Bayet is the Hebrew word for family, for home. And so the only difference in Bayet and Bayret is the addition of Rosh, which means that family includes the same R from Shamar, which is the observant individual, the person who listens with their ears, sees with their eyes, so they Shama and Shamar, and then they Yada and Bien, they come to know and understand through thinking about it. It shows their head, their brain, the family.
And that differentiates Yah's family from all of the family.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, if you were to just define it by the letters, Bayrith is a family of observant and thoughtful individuals.
Right.
And to get you a clue that it's family, what's the first letter in Bayrith?
It's the B, the home, family home.
Yeah, it's a picture of home, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sure.
The second letter is a Rosh, which we just talked about. What's the third letter in
it's a Yod. Well, that's the Yod.
Yeah, the Yod. Yod was hand. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the test being the concluding letter, that which is protective. Protected place for the German individual. In the home of Yahweh, secured and uplifted by his hand.
Yes.
So it's a family relationship. And so for those who observe his covenant. And then Zakar is the next word. Wah lach Zakar. And who remember. Mm-hmm. Who are mindful. Yeah, you know, you got to do more than just Shamar. Observe. You need to remember that you need to engage, you need to act. And so it's Zakar, mindful, who remember to to act and engage in his directions and instructions, Pakudam. Pakudam is an interesting word. It was one of the four words that Dod repeated over and over again in the 119th Psalm, his 22-letter review his, I'm going to tell you about your ABCs. I go through the alphabet with you. Is the longest of the Mizmor, where he explained how to observe the Torah. Pakudav is one of the four words that gets repeated over and over and over again. And Pakudav is directions, it's instructions, it's precepts and procedures, records and advice, principles, values and philosophy, guidance regarding terms and conditions. So we have to act upon and engage in his directions and instructions, his written records and advice, his precepts and procedures and principles, his values and philosophy. Yeah.
The thing that grabs me there, because it really is written records, that part of the definition, and that once again points us back to where's the written record that we're supposed to study. Well, of course, obviously, that sends us right back to the Torah. So it's very, very specific in that regard. That's where you find it. And the Mitzvah, where do you find the Mitzvah? And right back to the Torah. So I realize he repeats a lot to Yahweh because we're kind of dumb. So we have to hear it over and over and over again. But it's all there.
He designed us, and so he knows how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is the ultimate teacher. And a teacher who knows how his creation learns, know that we learn by repetition.
Sure.
How you learn. If you can tell us the same thing in different ways, it's like looking at a diamond. It's gorgeous, but the more facets it has, the more you get to appreciate it. God's going to tell us the same thing in lots of different ways. But there are very few statements that are as powerful as Mizmor 103:18.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a lot of fun for one little verse, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. In failing generosity and mercy, the magnanimous nature of Yahweh is forever, going forward and back in time, eternally presenting a witness without end for those who respect and revere him, with his vindication and righteousness being on behalf of his children, and his children's children, for those who observe his covenant, his family-oriented relationship, his family comprised of observant and thoughtful individuals, and who remember to act upon and engage in his directions and instructions, his written records and advice, his precepts, procedures, and principles, that which he values. Now, if you can find a more comprehensive presentation of who Yahweh is and what he's offering, then great. You know, embrace it. Learn from it. Accept it. Act upon it. Consider it. But that's a pretty good one to put up there.
Put your card right there.
Put a magnet on the refrigerator and say, I want to read that and something every day. That's a pretty good one to think about.
The memory book is a car.
Yeah. Since God is unchanging, the nature of our relationship with him pivots on our willingness to be observant. It is the only way for us to know who Yahweh is, what he is offering, and what he expects in return. Literally, the purpose of life is to be part of the covenant family. For this to occur, we must come to realize that Yah's mercy and enduring love is directed toward those who come to know him by name, toward those who respect who he is and what he has said and done, and towards those who seek to be right about him, such that they can appreciate and accept, they can act upon the conditions of the covenant. You know, this statement encloses those are Yahweh's name.
Yes.
This brings us to another example of the Messiah's brilliance. It reads, Yahweh has prepared and established Kun, formed, fashioned, and supports his throne, his place of authority and seat of honor, in the spiritual realm of the heavens, with his realm serving as a proverb, revealing what he and it is like by drawing pictures with words, mashal, communicating by way of visual and verbal comparisons to reveal who has ultimate dominion in everything, hakol, everywhere. Last time I checked, there was an artist among us. And you've come to appreciate word pictures, have you not?
Absolutely. It's been a way of life for me.
You can draw and paint in almost any medium from the style of the of the Renaissance artist to the style of kind of the old world artist to the lovable style of the characters that were presented by who was the Saturday Evening Post?
Exactly.
To just a portrait that character that immediately captures somebody's both appearance and attitude and character.
You want to say the
height?
That's not so sure.
Yeah, your understanding of the human anatomy and how the eyes and the ears and everything fits. And you can render a three-dimensional object in a two-dimensional space and give it the appearance of dimension. And you're brilliant at it. And know how to use light and color and shading and perspective to convey all those things. Well, Yahweh uses a different medium to paint his pictures.
Mm-hmm.
He uses letters which comprise words which are presented in sentences. So the medium that he uses to create what is really a seven-dimensional tapestry of artistry are words. Words are his colors. Words are his lights. Words are his perspective. So he is the ultimate artist, but his art is comprised of a different medium than most people are accustomed to. He is a artist by mashal, by word pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know that that theologians want to ascribe the mashal to Solomon. Because some places it says that, you know, Solomon wrote lots of Proverbs. You know, tens of thousands of them. It was only like 25 Proverbs that we have access to. You know, and Solomon's supposed to have written thousands of them. And you know, I've read what we know that Solomon wrote. Ecclesiastes, not very good. Song of Solomon, not very good. I've read what Job's written, his Mizmor. Brilliant.
Yes.
The Mashal read like the Mizmor. The only difference in the Mashal and the Mizmor is that Dod is speaking as a prophet and as a first-hand experience and sharing just episodes of his life and his relationship and the insight that he received as a Masiach, as a Shemek branch, as a Ben son of God, the anointed, the king of Israel, and as a Nabi, a prophet. And he's sharing this. The Mashal, which conveyed the same message, and I think are written the same way, I think it's clearly those that wrote them, they're all presented as a family. Every Mashal is written consistent with the Be'et and the Be'ret. It's always father, mother, son. Every single Mashal, father, mother, son, family. And so all of the Mashal, I think, were written by Dod. And the Mashal is observations for our time. It began because William, my favorite elevator man, William recommended that I translate Mashal 6 because he thought it's the adulterous woman in it was Christianity, and I think he was right. And so that's how we began observation for a time. It's Mashal 6, 7, 8, and went on from there. So there is a connection here that not only does Yahweh paint pictures with words, his beloved son presented the nature of the covenant family in the Mashal with words, telling us how was the best way for us to engage and to live with Yah. So Yahweh has prepared and established his throne in the spiritual realm of the heavens, with his realm serving as a proverb, revealing what he and it is like by drawing pictures with words and everything. So in everything. Well, what's the first story in the Torah?
Or the creation of the earth, of the world. The big bang.
All right. Does Yahweh explain both why and how and when he created the universe, the six-dimensional construct we call the universe?
It's pretty good math, isn't it?
Absolutely. That he spoke, he used words, he spoke the universe into existence. And he said, let there be light. So once again, words are the essence of the universe. He spoke it into existence. And truthfully, communication is the essence of both energy and matter. Energy and matter are comprised of a communication medium. Even life itself is written. DNA is a language. It's a three-dimensional alphabet and a language.
Mm-hmm.
Words underlie all of it. It's all about communication. And So God is saying he spoke the universe into existence, and the first thing that he said is, let there be light. And light is, if you wanted to have an appreciation for a word picture that's help understanding what heaven is like, there is no more important term than the Hebrew term or light. Why? Because as we have learned, light is eternal. And light is eternal the same way that passage we said this is eternal back in time and forward in time.
Mm-hmm.
On a photon of light, all time exists. It's not timeless, it's timeful. And the Hebrew language is because it's not stuck with past, present, and future tense. It's consistent, so the words that he's used are consistent with this very nature of light. The nature of light is what empowers us because as a physical being, we have to be empowered by the square of the speed of light when we're evolved into an energy-based spiritual being. And so that we, by light itself, we have this picture of who God is, of what he is offering to us, of what the universe is comprised of what God is comprised of what we're going to be comprised of how the Hebrew language works, how prophecy works, and really how we're going to spend our eternity because of E equals MC squared. It explains how we can transition from energy to matter and back from matter to energy when it serves our interest.
It's got to be the key to our future life. I mean, it's that without it, and without understanding a minimal amount of these statements that come from Einstein, you can put the whole picture together. You can, I mean, who thinks in terms of how dimensions and all until you get to that point? What a great time to be alive, you know.
I think the universe is comprised of six dimensions and the jazz and the seventh and the spiritual realm. How many days did Yahweh create, and how many days are presented in the creation account?
Well, he presented it as 6 days to that he did it all, which is
and enjoyed the seventh. And so the universe is six dimensions, and Yahweh's in the seventh as the word picture. How about this one? That from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden for corrupting Yahweh's testimony and failing to act upon what he said, to the time that we are brought back to the Garden of Eden is 6,000 years, and we'll spend 1,000 years, 6 plus 1, enjoying the earth as the Garden of Eden. Or what is the second story that's told in the Torah? Is it not the story of the Garden of Eden?
Absolutely.
So in the word picture of what heaven's going to be like, why not look and read and study and think about what life was like with Yah and Adam and Chawa and Eden.
Mm-hmm. And now you see Sukkot.
No politics, no government, no militaries, right. No police, no corruption. They took walks together, they talked together, they explored together, they examined life together. They named things together.
Yes, it was participatory. It was a team thing, too. Yes.
Yeah. Companionship. That's what heaven's going to be like. Another word picture. And so it goes. It's all about painting pictures with words so that we would understand. We are we're mental creatures for sure, but we're also visual creatures. It's, when you can visualize something, you really have a better appreciation of it. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, everything, if you look around your room, everything that you see was designed by somebody. And they had to start with an idea. So, I mean, that's
correct.
The way we think. Then we turn it into, we make it, turn it into to an object.
A company that was primarily designed lighting and had those products made. And I would always work with a graphic artist. And I would have in my mind the idea of the function, the form, and the appearance of a particular product. And I would work with a graphic artist, and I would use my words to describe, because I couldn't draw. But I could envision what I wanted, and I would convey in words what I wanted. The person would draw and say, no, not quite like that, a little bit over here, make this bigger, make that taller, change this material to that, you know, and we would design that way. And I ended up with thousands of design patents by being able to envision what I wanted and then convey with words and have an artist draw them and then sent those drawings off and had somebody make them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun thing to do. And I swear, I want to come up with a better sentence. Only because it's a bit funny, but no mosquito.
But it was fun, but you said it was fun to do, and that's what's expect that in Chamonix when we get there. That's what we're going to be doing.
I'm expecting a free hand to be able to have some fun. And I said, okay, if you can outdo me on this one, you go right ahead. Okay there, big boy. Put up or shut up.
Give us your best shot.
Yeah, give us your best shot. You know, and it's kind of like with our children, we would give it that tone and actually hope that they do come up with something better.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win game. You can't lose under this situation. You can't do better. Okay. Well, that was fun. Thanks for giving us a try.
Yeah, good shot. Good try.
You'd be the happiest guy in the world. It's a nicely done. So painting pictures with words is something I was particularly adept at, as was his favorite son. You know, heaven is a marvelous example. Using terms common to our three-dimensional material existence, Yahweh's prophets have tried to describe its spectacular appearance. You know, Dode was one of those that actually saw Yahweh in the seven-dimensional world. So, when Dode speaks of Yahweh in heaven, he speaks by experience. He was taken there. So Yahweh's prophets have all tried to describe its appearance, but frankly, it's well beyond our current vocabulary. It's far removed from what we can perceive as three dimensions are from seven. I know that time intersects the three dimensions of height, width, and depth at a 90-degree angle. I'm incapable of understanding how that is so. And I know that there are five and six dimensions in addition to time, and that they are probably based on the concepts of and what we observe in dark matter and dark energy. One being attractive, the other being repulsive. Therefore, you're dealing with being drawn into a relationship but still having free will to choose to avoid it if we wish to. And the seventh dimension is based strictly on communication. That's my interpretation of the seven dimensions, and I think that's a part of the picture of the 6+1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Yahweh used when he described creating the universe. Now, that being the case, Yahweh has composed a familiar picture that very few fully appreciate. And we're talking about that. Heaven is like the Garden of Eden. If you don't like the Garden of Eden, if you think that would be boring, there's no worship, no laws, no governments, no politics, no religion, no conspiracies. If you don't like the Garden of Eden, you ain't going to like heaven. You don't want to go there. And we don't want you there. And if you haven't thought about how wonderful it would be to explore creation and life with Yah, then what's the point? Heaven is like the Garden of Eden. You know, consider what happened there, and then expand the size of the Garden of Eden to the size of the universe, which is 93 billion light years in diameter. 93 billion light years in diameter. And imagine that you'll be able to explore all of it, rather than being stuck on this third rock from the sun. And you get to appreciate what it is like to camp out with Yahweh and other covenant members throughout space and time. will still be guided by his words, even his Torah teaching.
Sure, you'll have it in your heart as well.
We are integrated right into us. We'll still observe the Shabbat. We're still going to attend the Mikra. We're still going to celebrate as they were intended. A lamb will still be on the menu, as will matzah and olive oil with bitter herbs and a very fine red wine. But we will no longer have to endure any form of religion or politics, lies or liars, abuse or abusers.
I can't imagine the negative of that, but somebody does. I mean, people obviously do. I mean, you can present everything you said to
them. Yeah, if you're religious, you're going to hate it. You would hate it. You're not going to get
it. If you love religion, you can't embrace it.
Right. If you're political, you'd hate it.
Yeah. You really would.
Conspiratorial, because, you know, the conspirators are just so frustrated when we say that chemtrails are an illusion. They're condensation trails. And when we tell a conspiratorialist that, no, the Jews aren't trying to took over the world. They won't dominate certain industries. They're not menacing. And you end those conspiracies, and they just look at you like you're crazy. And you say 9/11 was not an inside job. Building 7 did not collapse because the government brought it down. The mass shootings have nothing to do with a government plot. That the Clintons were not running a pedophile ring, and Bill may have enjoyed way too much time on the Lolita Express and ought to have had his ears pinned back and be imprisoned for what he did on the Lolita Express. But no, he's not running a pedophile slave ring. He's a corrupt man, to be sure. But his wife's probably worse than he is, but it's just not true. None of these conspiracies are true. None of them. And to be in an environment where no one is trying to defend or promote a conspiracy, what a wonderful experience that's going to be. No one is going to be trying to talk about a political candidate or a political party or be patriotic.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, what a... No one's going to be drugged out of their mind. You're not going to have a bunch of people that have inactive nesamas who no longer think. We're not going to be surrounded by irritating bumper stickers like coexist. We're not going to be told that all you need to do is love. No, it's going to be an entirely different and intellectually stimulating future. Now, Dode was familiar with Yahweh's Mamluk messengers, and so he is correctly describing their nature and purpose. They have been programmed to follow orders, to listen to what Yahweh has to say, and then do it. They're essentially very powerful, very capable implements. They convey God's intent and keep those he loves safe. It's an important job. And they're empowered by Yah, they're directed by Yah. Just because they don't have free will does not diminish them in any way. They're extraordinarily powerful, extraordinarily important implements of Yah's authority and direction. So this is what Dode wrote in Mizmor 103:20. His heavenly messengers and spiritual implements, his malach, his envoys and representatives, ambassadors and functionaries, those dispatched and deputized to do his bidding, have been commanded to convey your support for the benefit of Yahweh, for the Barak. Since you have been ordered, speaking of them, you've been ordered to do so. Commend and extol the marvelous nature of Yahweh. Seek to communicate the blessings and benefits associated with Yahweh. It's written in the Peel Imperative. And while this mood is especially the typical expression of second person volition, it can be used to express an imperative or command, which in this case is appropriate. And further in the Peel stem, the subject is revealing the way the object engages at his direction, and this would be the I was direction. His mighty ones who serve as his forceful representatives, his gabor, those who serve as mighty warriors, as valiant militia, as defensive troops, as his impactful implements operating within his structured militaristic command and control regiment where orders are carried out. This is one of the things that, I guess there's a lot of things that people don't have an appreciation of Malak. A, they're not pretty little girls with wings.
No.
They're sexual. In fact, most of the time, the Malak are given masculine identity. I don't know why he chose masculinity for them, but he does. I guess maybe it's to confront the Christian of angels being loving little beings with cute little beings with wings. That's not who they are.
Yeah.
They don't have free will. They can't love. Only free will. It's an extraordinarily differentiating thing. And that's what differentiates them from us. We have free will. But more than that, the Malak exist in what we would consider to be a command and control regiment. Now, it's like the military. In the military, the top dog, who in this case are the top ram, is Yahweh. And the top ram tells all the others, this is what you're going to do. And if you're in the military, you are an implement of the general's or the admiral's will. But you are. If the admiral or general says, you go over there and you point your weapon in that direction and you shoot whatever comes over that hill, that's what you do. That's why I don't want to be in the military. But
yeah.
In the case of Yahweh's Malak, they're in a Shaba, a command and control regiment. And they do fight. I think some Malak were involved in getting that storm to turn north. That's my conclusion. I think that Malak are the reason that after all of these books, that not a single Muslim or Christian fanatical individual has ever been able to harm me or anyone in my family or my home. And when Yahweh returns, he's going to wipe a lot of people out.
Yes, he is.
The Malak are implements in this in our three-dimensional world to do what Yahweh wants done. And we ought not feel sorry for them, like there's a Malak guarding the Ark of the Covenant and Moshe's original autograph of the Torah and the second set of tablets that Yahweh etched with his own hand.
Mm-hmm.
Not bored. That time is forever, and he has the great honor and distinction of doing what the Creator of the universe has asked. He knows the Creator of the universe. It's a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
But don't ascribe characteristics to them that are appropriate. Command and control. They're implements doing the will of Yah. And it's an important job. Yahweh wouldn't constantly say that he is Yahweh of the Shaba. The command and control regiment of spiritual implements. And to a large degree, I like to think of us as implements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tools. An implement is a tool. We're lucky that God doesn't want to work alone, and He is not all that particular. And the implement that He's willing to communicate through and work through, but that's what He likes to do. And thank goodness that we'd be out of a job.
That's right.
So it's marvelous, and so in some ways we're less powerful implements, but we are, as implements in some ways, are greater than the Malak because we can fall in love with the source of this inspiration.
Yes, we have a range of emotions that we do not have.
Yeah, in love with us. And we can choose to act upon what he said, which is a much more genuine response than someone who's following orders.
Exactly.
In the way we're still implements. You know, I haven't had, in the past 18 years, a single original thought about God. Not one.
No, it all came out of here. Out of the Torah.
Who came out? They're all derived from the words. While there may be 1,000 unique insights, those insights are all derived from his testimony, and not a single one of them is something that you or I said, boy, I think I've just come to understand the nature of light or time. No, it's strictly what we've learned from you.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, totally. Totally.
So his messengers and spiritual implements have been commanded to convey your support for the benefit of Yahweh, his mighty ones who serve as his forceful representative. Now, this is Gabor. And there are Gabor in the Malach, in the sense of they're enormously powerful. And the Malach are no nonsense. I mean, look at the Malach that took Lot out of Sodom. And he said, you know, he said, listen, go and get this done. We're not hanging around forever. You want to invite your sons-in-law, then go do it. You want to invite your wife, that's your call. We're not leaving until we get you out of here. If you want to bring your family with you, that's your choice. It's not our decision. And then when they began to leave, they're just no nonsense. You know, they said, we think you ought to go that way. He said, but I want to go this way. That's your call. You want to go this way. You know, and they kept on saying, listen, what you do is your choice, but we're under orders to get you out of here because Yahweh made a commitment to Abraham, and he's told us he's going to destroy this place, but he's not going to destroy it until we get you out of here. So long as we get you out of here, whatever you want to do is up to you. But between now and then, you're coming with us. There's just no nonsense.
Mm-hmm. That's the story.
I kind of like them. I think it'd be fun to hang with.
They exist. Tell me something. They exist, as I see it, primarily to assist and protect Yah's family. I don't know when they were created. I don't know that they were created all the time, or whether he actually designed them as part of when he designed the universe. And then all their functions on every study I've done, they seem to be there primarily. Everything they encounter is protect the family, or help the family go where they need to go, do what they need to do, or protect them from those, either the universe is falling apart with weather, or else they protect them from the Malach, who actually were designed to be dysfunctional.
Yeah.
So,
well, they were programmed to do what they were supposed to do, but they gave them the opportunity to go rogue on their programming. It wasn't so much of a choice, because it wasn't free will anyway. Because with free will,
we know it.
There's not an immediate consequence. You know, it's there is a consequence of your choices and free will. But if it's immediate incarceration, immediate death, immediate impoverishment, that sort of thing, then it's not free will. We don't have free will as it relates to laws. If we go out and shoot somebody because that was our decision, we're going to face an immediate consequence. The Malach don't have free will in that regard. It doesn't mean they can't shoot somebody. But if they go against their programming, as some of the Malach did with Hatzatan, there is an ultimate consequence, but not an immediate one. It's kind of gives an appreciation of the difference in free will and still be able to go rogue on your programming. But yeah, the Malach do all of those things. I think the Malach, help us. They're here to help.
Yeah.
He says in all dispatch thousands to protect those who are engaged doing what Yah wants done. And it's just, the fact of the matter is there are so few of us who are willing to do what Yah wants done to effectively, honestly, accurately, passionately, completely translate his testimony and encourage the people, particularly Yehudim, to think about it, that he needs to protect those who are willing to do it because there's just too few of us. And number two, what we have to say is so irritating to the most irrational people, the religious and political types, that the truth is going to want to have them, the most irrational, are going to want to kill us.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, it's I hate to use the term mandatory, but I think that it's pretty close to that. If Yahweh didn't dispatch his Malach to take care of his family, we'd be taken out of the way. And Hasatan, he's not omnipresent nor omniscient or any of those kinds of things. There's so few people that are willing to share Yahweh's testimony that he would make their lives miserable. And God's got to keep that from happening. So he's got Malach. He needs things protected. You know, there is 1.5 billion Muslims who would like to destroy every Jew and destroy the land of Israel. God's got to keep that from happening. So he uses Malach. So the authority to project his power, act upon his word by actually listening to the sound of his speech. They listen to what Yahweh says, and they do what he says. That's what he just said. Command and control. Yah tells them what to do. They do what he tells them. That's just it. That's a great job.
Yeah.
No free will involved. No love involved. But that's still an amazingly wonderful job. All of his spiritual implements and heavenly representatives must do as you have been commanded, consistently conveying your support for the benefit of Yahweh, attending to and serving him by acting, by working to achieve, engaging in, and acting upon, literally doing his will. That's the best presentation one could have of who the Malach are. Don't got it. And it's important to know who the Malach are because Yahweh constantly tells us that he is Yahweh of Shabbat, of this command and control regimen of spiritual implements. And he uses Malach to say, these are my representatives, these are my envoys, these are my deputies, these are the ones I've dispatched to convey. And by messenger, Malach is also the Hebrew word for messenger and messenger. He's essentially saying that they do what Yahweh wants done, what Yahweh has said is what they do. They act in consistent with Yahweh's word. So it's a marvelous presentation of them here. Yahweh's heavenly messengers and spiritual implements have been commanded to convey your support for the benefit of Yahweh. His mighty ones serve as his those with the authority and the potential to project his power, act upon his word by actually listening to the sound of his speech. All of his spiritual implements and heavenly representatives must do as you have been commanded, consistently conveying your support for the benefit of Yahweh, attending to and serving him by working to achieve, engaging in, acting upon, and doing his will. You and I Everyone listening to this program, we don't have to do what Yah wants done. We don't have to work with him. We don't have to engage in what he has, what he desires. We don't have to convey our support for him. We don't have to listen to what he has to say. We can opt out of all of it. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's in our interest to do all of those things.
Best interest, absolutely.
But it's only for us. And we're the beneficiaries when we do. I'm not sure the Malacca are beneficiaries what they do. It's still a wonderful job. But we're beneficiaries when we do. We get adopted into Yah's family. Now, I think it's probably what drove HaSatan crazy, in a big, powerful, eternal being. Head of a huge segment of the Malach, and all of a sudden he sees Yah will create this puny little being down there that had such limited accessibility because he was matter, and Yah was making this big fuss over Adam and Chawa, and spending all of his time with him. And I just think brilliant. I'm far more beautiful. I'm far more powerful. I'm eternal. I've seen you create the universe. What the hell? What's this fascination with the one thing that I don't have? Free will. Why are you so enamored, God, with this? And I think it caused his programming to go awry. Well, the thing happened.
That's about a good answer.
Says, you know, the most is greater than we, and yet in some ways we're greater than that.
Mm-hmm.
No. You know, Malacca are not pretty, sweet little girls with wings. They're neither loving nor sexual. As energy-based beings, however, they're enormously powerful, and they project the force of the spiritual realm. Yah refers to them as Shaba, which denotes an efficient and effective command and control organizational structure. The Malach are eternal and able to travel between dimensions. Now, recognizing the nature and purpose of the Malach, Dode wasn't actually giving them directions, but he was instead explaining how they operate so that we might better understand how Yahweh deploys them. It's important for us to know this stuff. They're tools serving Yahweh and his family. And he's telling us to choose to appreciate and claim everything that Yahweh has done and will do. And all of the places his influence is felt and he is clearly known. My soul commends and adores its association with Yahweh. So here's how he's come to understand what Yahweh's like in the spiritual realm. He's come to understand the word pictures that Yahweh uses to depict what life is going to be like with him in the seventh dimension. He's come to explain the Malach's role, and he just says, as for me, I'm recommending that you choose to do as I have done, to appreciate and claim everything that Yahweh has done and will do. In all the places his influence is felt, he is clearly known. My soul, this is Dode speaking, commends and adores its association with Yahweh. Of course. You know, we do not know Yahweh nearly as well as Dode did.
No.
Dode was taken to Samayim. He was taken to heaven. Yahweh inspired him such that he took him to the future, took him to the past. Took him beyond dimensions, inspired his words, inspired his life, set his spirit upon him, anointed him. Yeah, Dode knew Yahweh better than we know Yahweh. And yet we, through Dode's words, have come to know Yahweh very, very, very well. And we, too, appreciate and acclaim everything that Yahweh has done.
Absolutely. That was my note self to the column, on the column side of the your writing. I said, me, too. Absolutely appreciate the claim.
And if you were to ask somebody, what has Yahweh done?
Oh, my God.
How many people would...
How many people would life create the universe? Come on.
How many people would say, well, his soul endured matzah so that we could be seen as perfect and be vindicated? How many would say that he fulfilled Bukudim and empowered us on Shavuot so that we could be enriched and enlightened? Who would say that he's returning on Yom Kippurim, and that's not what he has done, but what he will do, but this language is eternal in time?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the one that explained to Noah? He's the one that inspired the words of his favorite songwriter, and he's the one who led his children out of the captivity of man, of human oppression. He is the father of the covenant. How many people know those things?
It's infinitesimal. I mean, even if there were 7,000 of us, and when that was one in a million, I don't think it's that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not yet.
Not yet.
Maybe 1/7 of that number now, at about 1,000 and growing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's really immaterial.
Yes.
The intent is for a meaningful number of Yehudim, of Israelites, to return to Yah before he returns, to come out of Babylon, to come out of the United States, which is political Babylon, out of Christianity, which is religious Babylon, out of the Islamic Middle East, which is geographic Babylon, and return to Israel, which is symbolic of the Promised Land and of God's home. And that's the intended audience, and for Yah to honor his promise to Abraham, which he will honor, his children need to return to him, and it needs to be a meaningful number of them. And so the number of us, Goyim, and even many, many Yehudim, the more DNA tests that are done, the more we find that the majority of those who thought they were Goyim who have joined the covenant are really Yehudim. But the more wonderful heaven is going to be between now and then, but the numbers are irrelevant because the numbers that matter to Yah are Yehudim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come out with my people. Come back to Yah. Return not to a Messiah named Jesus Christ, but to a Messiah named Dod, the past and future king of Israel. So choose to appreciate and acclaim everything that Yahweh has done and will do, and all the places his influence is felt, and he is clearly known. My soul commends and adores its association with Yahweh. Yeah, I can speak that in first person, can't you?
Absolutely, I can and do.
Yeah.
It truly does. I truly do. I was thinking about what a wonderful, in fact, I was talking with a member of the family this week, and I was suggesting to him what a wonderful time we're in, and we were talking about, you know, our lives and things, but nothing is more important than being able to participate in this, to be able to read what Yahweh actually said and to understand what Yahweh actually said and to share it with somebody that's interested or to support one another. And
life gets in the way, and I don't translate. Today was one of them. Mm-hmm. Yesterday,
understandable. We know it. Yeah.
And before yesterday was probably the most hectic day that I had to move out of a house that I had just moved back into because I moved everything. I knew we were going to move out of this house and onto the boat, so I had to take every bulky possession and put it into a storage space and coordinate that move, while at the same time I moved the things that were appropriate and got everything in terms of produce and food and everything on the boat. And then I had to take it all off because of the approaching storm and put it back into this house. And then my lease ran out, and the next day when the storm finally subsided, I had to move everything back out of the house and out and into storage all in 24 hours because the owner's son was coming. He wanted us off out of the house and off the dock. And that day, it was the most hectic of those days. The day that I had to be out of the house and everything moved into the storage unit and back onto the boat. And we had to take everything off the boat, you know, because of the storm. And here we move it all back. And that day, I got up a little before 6 o'clock, and I spent the first two hours translating.
Wow, good for you.
And it was the best thing I could have done. And today, you know, my day started with the first person on the boat, a mechanic at shortly after 7, and I didn't get it done. I've had meetings and worked all day. But I knew that today would conclude with our program, and that, yes, it would, you know, I feel like an addict in a good way. I don't I go into withdrawals. It's a really lousy feeling. And so, you know, tomorrow, I've got a lot of things that need to be done. But you know what I'm going to begin tomorrow? I've got
open the door and start looking at it and translating.
I translate everything to the computer on the boat. I'm sitting here in my office on the boat. And I'm going to plop myself down, and I'm going to translate and contemplate and write. I'm going to begin my day tomorrow on the Shabbat.
Well, sounds like a fun day to me.
Yeah, and you do it all the time.
Yeah, I do it a lot. I gave final notice to the government earlier. Gave my final notice to my classes. This is it. And it's nothing like having 20 women who can't stand you all of a sudden, who loved you a week ago. No, don't leave. Don't quit. And there's a lot of reasons for it. But one of the good byproducts is that I won't have to squeeze time in between my regular week to sit down with this. Some of this stuff is, especially now, there's been so many things coming at us. That you were pointing out, look about this and listen. And it takes a lot of research to go through it and feel comfortable that you adequately translated it to the point that you really understand it. I'm talking myself. And I look at it and just I run out of time. And then all of a sudden it's late and I'm just absolutely worn out. But this will be the greatest thing. This will be the greatest part of my life coming up because
the fact that you and I spent the better part of a week together with some other some of the most actively involved covenant members and either translating or contributing or editing, and we spent the better part of a week together, and we all got to see how we go about preparing and how we go about studying and learning. And man, I was the most reluctant of all to everybody gather around as I use the tools that I have to translate and then study and wrestle through what these things mean, because there's for me, it's so methodical, it seems so slow, there are so many variables. You really have to think about it and look at the variables, and you're constantly coming up with words that just aren't easy, that require a lot of thought, and you end up having to reject certain possibilities and embrace others. And I thought that that if everybody were to see how it actually happens, it would just take the how methodical it is, how much interpretation and extrapolation and contemplation goes into it, that it would demystify it to the point that it would be, okay, well, that's pretty dull. But everybody seemed to really enjoy it.
No, that's not dull.
It just seemed comfortable. That it was some artistry involved in it and the choices and how the choices were made. So...
it's extraordinarily logical. You've got a whole array of sources to say this is what the word means, is what it meant, and this, maybe this is the perspective from the early ancient Hebrews, but this, you know, and then you can go through all this and you can say this is what some people have interpreted it to mean, and but this is what it says, and this is, I'm amazed at how many times the letters confirm what's said. I did a couple of pages on the, just because of this section, I did a couple of pages on the Malach and the Tesava and just reviewed it and looked at it from all different angles, and I'll send it to you just for your entertainment pleasure this week. But I get these little sides. The thing that frustrates me the most is I love what you do, and I understand a little bit now exactly how you approach it, which is not far removed from what I've been doing, because he's kind of helped us all along the way to do this and how we should do this, and all your books tell us how to do this. So it's nice to see it in action, but it's also when you do it, it forces you to look at a whole bunch of other stuff, and to me, it just, my mind goes, oh, well, wait a minute, let's take a pause here and take a left turn and go look at this word even more, or look at this and this and this and that. And I find it just thrilling. I mean, I have never not been rewarded for an extra hour of chasing down a word or chasing down a phrase or looking up. You know how you had told us that you'll go through maybe the word is the word appears maybe 24 times or something like that, and rather than just the first use or the second or third use, you'll go through all 24. That's an enormous amount of time, but it's always rewarding when you do, because you'll find something there that you'll go, wow, what about that? And so that's the artistry you have to put in, and you being a writer, of course, it takes you have a great skill at putting it into words, but still, it's, I just like to pick it all apart and look at it and say, wow, well, that's exactly verifying everything that we've come to know.
Yes, it does, and the more you study, the closer you examine, the more you learn, the more you come to understand, more insights that can be derived from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a marvelous experience, all in all. And I would love, please send me your research on Malach,
sure.
And let's begin our program next week.
We'll look at it and see where it's worth the time. But, I mean, it's to me it was interesting. Just all the letters kind of verify pretty much the understandings you've written for many years on this is what the Malach are like. And it's, and every angle I took on it, it came back, that's exactly what we can derive from what Yahweh told us in every aspect.
So what's the essence of what you learned as you studied Malach?
Well, they... I kind of narrowed it down to they're designed, just like I said, I think they were designed primarily, their biggest function they exist for is to help Yahweh build his family, and that requires them to protect his family members and to assist them and, give, you know, if they make a choice. I mean, Lot had a shot. He chose not to do it because he turned away from the mountain rather than going and then went to the cave.
Let me ask you this question, Kirk. The Hebrew letter that speaks of protection, protecting of some of a of, if you will, the flock. What's the Hebrew letter that is written that specifically speaks of protection?
Well, if you put it that way, I always think of a chet because of the fence.
Okay, how about the Lamed, which is the shepherd's staff?
Well, Lamed is the shepherd's staff, and that's the shepherd using his right hand or his hand to lift us out of a hole and pick us up. Also, you can redirect, or you can also use it as a weapon. So when you have Malak, that's the second letter in Malak.
Yeah, the middle letter in Malak is the shepherd's staff. So the shepherd's staff reinforces your conclusion.
Absolutely. I'll send it to you. It's pretty well analyzed. I need to write it a little bit different so you can read it better. But I went to the root, you know, like a lamb, the lamb cough. It means to walk or travel a path and a journey, and it's the hand with a. It's also a hand on or joined to the staff. So you have it's more than just the shepherd's staff. It's the power of the hand, Yahweh's hand reaching down. You know, that's the root. So,
and then increases its power, its authority, its capability.
Mm-hmm. And ability to do the work, yes. So that's incorporated in the earlier meanings as well.
Does the shepherd's staff, is it designed to protect the wolves?
No, absolutely not. You can beat on the head, but it's there to pull you away from someone who's trying to stay away from Yahweh. Yeah.
So the shepherd's staff is only designed to protect the shepherd's flock, correct?
Absolutely. Just like the Malak.
So I think the middle letter says that the Malak exists to protect Yahweh's flock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first letter of Malak, what is it?
It's the Mem.
All right. What is the Mem symbolic of?
It's the cleansing. It's the I always think along the Ruach Kodesh for the spirit, because it's a cleansing spirit. It's a cleansing
water is the source of life and the universal solvent for cleansing. So it's to cleanse and to provide life. But it is the symbol of the spirit. So they're spiritual beings. Malak says, the Mem says they're spiritual beings. And the Lamed says they're there to protect the flock.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kaf means they're empowered.
Uh-huh.
They have authority. They have power. They have influence. Those are the three letters, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, if the actually you can have an Aleph in the middle of and after the Lam too, but the Lam. I'm sorry, the LK, just by itself, it means to walk or travel a path, a journey, and it's a hand on to join the staff. But the lock, the next three-letter variation, is when you have the Aleph added to it, and the Aleph, it means to walk for another.
Yeah, there's four letters.
They're helping us, you know, they're helping us in our walk. So they're helping to do the work to make sure that we're ensured that we get the path. That's what they were doing with Lot. What they
did with it's Mem, Lamed, Aleph, Kaf.
Mm-hmm.
So they are the shepherds of the Yah, because the letter that Yah uses most to represent his nature is the Aleph, the ram's head.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the staff of the ram, the staff of God. And it's the hand of God with a the...
I mean, so the cough alone is, you know, the ability to work or to welcome, to hold on to hold together, to point a direction to go to or to throw, for that matter. Like David threw that rock at the old Goliath, but regardless, it's still everything strengthens what we know about them and just absolutely makes sense. And then I went and did the Shaba as well along the same lines, and I'll put it all together for you so it's not quite so chopped up, and you can have a little more, a little easier to read. But but one leads to another. But these are the things that are so much fun to me to do for that just it's hard to find enough time to do it. But soon I will, so it won't be quite so rushed to pick these out, because I know I miss some things when I do, and I know that when I go back, I find some things later.
Great. Hey, by the way, you know, when we began the show talking about the storm shifting paths.
Yes.
The day the storm was in, went over between in Abaco and went right over Treasure Bay. Do you know where I was supposed to be that night?
You're supposed to be there, probably. I'm just guessing.
Okay. Yeah. Treasure Cave, in fact, on my insurance forms, where that was going to be home base. We were going there, and that was going to be home base as we explored. It doesn't exist anymore. None of the homes exist. It doesn't exist. It literally does not exist anymore. That's where I was supposed to be the night the storm roared through.
Well, obviously Yahweh needs his neck ring. If anybody, I'm sorry for those people down there, but that was coming. I am the light that you can count on Yah like you can count on Yah, man. He loves us very much.
His job, you know, he wants certain things done, and his protection is not limited to us, because anyone who wants to engage in this way, his protection will is for them as well. He's not going to make life perfect for us. He's not going to fix every ailment, but he's going to, because it's
not
ailments. In fact,
that ain't the deal.
Look at Dode and all of the issues of his family with his, his eldest son raping his eldest daughter, and having his third son kill his firstborn for having done so, and having raped his sister, and then having him try to take over the kingdom and have so much pain, so much dysfunction within his own family. It's like having Hosha marry Gomer. God wanted him to have an appreciation of what God is enduring with his children.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I've got issues with my family, and God's not here to say I'm going to make it all perfect for you, because if it's all perfect for us while we're in this life, we're going to have no concept as to what Yah was trying to convey, what he wants, what he dislikes, what his frustrations are. It's essential for us to experience what he's experiencing, if we're going to have any ability to speak about it, to understand, appreciate it. So, I know that you've got aches and pains in your life. I've got them in mine. God's not saying I'm going to give me a bowl of cherries. But he is going to.
And that's okay, because he says he'll take care of the big things and get us to do the things that, and so we get to participate in the things that he wants most done, and that's what we want to do. But every time you say that I made a deal for him, for my family, I go ahead and extend that out to the rest of us.
Yeah. I know, so, somebody was saying, are you going to have any more children? I said, I think last time I checked, it's been over 1,000.
It's getting bigger.
Yeah, and you feel a sense of responsibility. Okay, I mean, I understand that that Yahweh is the father. I understand that that Yahweh inspired Dode and Abraham to serve as models in this, and inspired Moshe to commit. And it doesn't change the fact that it's been a long time since someone took his testimony seriously and said, I'm going to go where the words lead and share it freely and devote 18 years of their life to sharing this and knowing that it's resonating with people who have become part of his family. So to some degree, I feel like that I have a whole lot of children. And that's not that I'm dad, because I'm not, but You still feel a responsibility for caring for, nurturing, teaching, guiding Yah's family. And that responsibility and opportunity goes away when we're all in Shamaim and spiritual together. We're just, but, you know, now there is a sense of responsibility. And it's a wonderful responsibility. It's not a bad one. It's a wonderful responsibility.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity.
Well,
last year, someone said, you know, you've been mucking long enough and been patient enough. It's time that, you know, that it's doggy time and not like, you know, chat time.
Yeah.
I'm glad the cell phone worked.
Yeah. Ask some people that are here on the show, you know, especially on the tape, maybe you can listen to it a little bit and see how it came across. There's a few times you cut out, but for the most part, it worked pretty well. So I'm hoping you can get
your cell is slightly muffled, but it's not bad at all. And I heard a lot of people very early on said it's coming across just fine.
Did it good? Good.
Yeah, in fact, the person that said that it's not bad at all said, as I was watching as the storm turned and had a bit of a giggle, this show to me is kind of like sitting around a campfire and quietly listening to older folks having the most interesting conversations. It's a nurture for a lot of people. Yeah, it's wonderful for all of us. Yeah, another person cell phone held up through the whole show.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So this is good. All right. Good night. Shabbat shalom. Enjoy your Shabbat.
Okay, see you later. I'll send you some stuff.
Good night to all.
Good night, yeah.